grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that you.
Welcome to the Record Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. You have to excuse me, my voice is still recovering. I went and done them shows in San Antonio last weekend, which were man, that Saturday night show was not good. It was not good. It went far. It went fine as far as there were laughs, and the people, you know, come up and told me afterwards they had a good time. But just was not a show I enjoyed doing. I don't know what it was about that crowd, but my good friend Billy D. Washington had this little joke he'd make every once in a while at the end of a rough show, kind of a tough crowd. Let me fix my lighting here. Things get a little cockeyed. I've had the Wrecking Yard completely taken apart and put back together over the last few days. But it'd be a shitty crowd, and Billy D get into that show, and he'd go, I want y'all to collectively get together and exchange phone numbers and decide to never go anywhere in public together again. And that was kind of the way I felt about that crowd Saturday night at that Retama Race Park in San Antonio. And a lot of it not even necessary because of the crowd. They were small, but they held the show up really late, started the show really late, so people got drunk, and people were too drunk by the time I got on stage to even be coherent. So you had a couple people that were really just whacked out of their gourd by that point, because they started the show, you know, 30 to 45 minutes late. And it all boils down to is basically Highway 35, that runs right up, I-35 runs right by this race park. It's just tore all to hell. It's just, I sat on that thing, honest to God, I sat and looked at my hotel. I sat on that freeway and stared at my hotel. If I had got out of my car, grabbed my bags, and started walking, it had taken me 5 minutes to get there. I sat on that freeway 46 minutes, stared at my freaking hotel. 35 is a piece of shit on its best day. But the way they've got it all torn up, they've got 1604 and the Anderson Loop all tore up, you can't get to a damn thing over there. I've never seen so many pre-sale tickets and so many people not show. Like, people bought the tickets, paid good cash money for the tickets, and still didn't come. That's crazy. That never happened. You don't get me wrong. There's always a margin, you know, 8 to 10 tickets. There's like 40 people didn't come. And I guarantee it's that damn traffic. You can't get to that place. Who in the hell won't spend their Saturday night sitting on 35 staring at a daggum horse track they can't get to? Like, y'all don't even need to be booking shit there yet. Just let them finish the highway before you start screwing around here. Because what a damn disaster. Top of that all, I got sick. So somebody dosed me with whatever this respiratory crap is going around. Now me and the kids and mama and everybody, it's just sort of run through our house the way it does. And I lost my voice for a couple days, which when you're a fella, what makes you living using your voice, that's always scary. It's always like, is this the last time I'm going to lose it? You know? It's one of them things you worry about when you make your money with your mouth. Maybe not all with my mouth, but I can see how that could have some negative connotations, somebody thinking about it the wrong way. And I should probably rephrase it, but I'm not going to, because I feel like y'all are adults and y'all can get past it. Probably wrong about that. Yeah, you never want to lose your voice. It's the worst. It's the worst. Right? Spooky, scary. Spooky, scary stuff. Lose your voice. I did, however, get a lot of work done on the book, a lot of writing done. We are, with the first book, we are less than 100 pages from the end, which feels impossible. I got to tell you, looking back over the periods of your life where you're a piece of shit for a podcast is one thing, but doing it so you can put it in print, woo, buddy. That'll work on your old psyche. But, like I said, I am enjoying working with Adam. I did get a lot of book work done this week since I couldn't make all the videos I want to make. I spent a whole lot of time just hanging out with that cat. I have become good friends with that kitty cat. And she is proven herself to be the perfect addition for the Longmire family. My children are both just tickled to death by her presence. And I can tell that she's been real good for Rachel. Much as I love them little kittens, Rachel raised them in some 50s. And when they got killed, it broke something, you know, as it will. Yeah, San Antonio was a disaster. It was, you know what, I shouldn't call it a disaster because I had a really good lunch meeting Saturday with the owner of Outlaws and Gents Grooming Company. We're going to be working together doing some stuff. We're getting all that started. It's just, you know how it is when you enter into business, everybody, there's contracts and all kind of things you got to figure out before you just jump off into bed. It ain't like a one-night stand. It's going to be a long-term business agreement. Also, I've become a pretty good friend. I would say we're becoming friends with the guy that owns the company. I really like him, and I'm kind of... Justice Mike keeps hitting me. Kind of at a stage of my life where I just don't want to work with people I don't like. I don't necessarily need to believe in your ideals and stuff like that to work with you, but I need to have a level of trust in you. I need to have some camaraderie. I need to have some common ground. And me and old, his name's Shane. Me and old Shane just, we hit it off right off the bat. And that always makes it easier to do business with somebody. Makes it a little tougher if the business goes sour or if, you know, there has to be a divorce somewhere down the line, but nothing worth having's easy. Ain't that some shit somebody said one time? So I've had some easy stuff that was pretty good too. If I'm being honest, not all them old sayings hold up, I don't think. I'm getting ready today. It's a, my God, I've lost what track of days it is. It's Friday morning out here in the wrecking yard. And the only reason I'm early up this early is I had to do radio this morning. I don't believe, I don't know who listens to radio in the morning, because I never really listened to radio in the morning a lot on the way to work. That wasn't a thing I did. I played my own music I wanted to hear. I always had my own sort of playlist or something going on. So I don't know who listens to radio in the morning, but those radio DJs are, hey, Jerry Wayne Longmire, now tell us what's going on. Are you over there in Houston, Texas? You know, this guy out in Mississippi. I'm doing radio from Mississippi. And like, how do you get up every morning? I'm going to ask John Clay Wolf that, because he's been doing it as long as I know. John Clay Wolf been getting up at butthole o'clock in the morning to get on the radio and sound chipper. But John, I will say this about JCW. If you listen to the JCW show, he don't start out full of jazz and pizzazz in the morning. He works into it a little bit. He comes in there and there's a little bit of grumbling, and the cast works into it and begins the show. So it feels like an evolution over the course of the morning. But some of them guys, and you know what I'm talking about, like to just the gimmick. Hey, it's blah, blah. I almost said Rowdy Yates, and that's the name of a good friend of mine that's a DJ, and I wouldn't make fun of Rowdy Yates. I love Rowdy Yates, but it's always those guys, you know, Big D and Bubba and John Boy and whatever, you know, in the morning, and it's, I don't know how them dudes do that. You know, it's so funny because you meet all them old radio pairs. I knew Stevens and Pruitt real well that were big here in Houston. And I believe they also went by Hudson and Harrigan at one point. But I knew, or maybe Dean and Raj, maybe that was the other one. I don't know. I think it's Hudson and Harrigan they went by at one point because they lost the rights to their own name or something. But if you meet any of them old radio duos, almost every time they do not like each other. They do not get along. Walton and Johnson argued and fussed, and Stevens and Pruitt, boy, they spit fire and cuss each other. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think you can get up every morning and go hang out with somebody every morning for 10, 15 years of your life and just not end up just about ready to choke that dude, you know? Like, just do that same thing every freaking morning. I don't know that I could do it. I don't think I could. I don't think you're never going to hear the morning show with Jerry Wayne Longmire. It's not going to be it. I did mornings for years, you know, working construction, boots on the ground, 5:30 a.m. It's time to go make the magic happen. But I didn't have to be chipper. Hell, most mornings I didn't talk. I just grunted until about 11. I get mad when somebody calls me before noon. When somebody texts me or calls me before noon, I'm like, what in the hell could you possibly need to talk to me about before lunchtime? What in the grand scope of what is happening in the world is going to matter to me any more before noon than it will afterwards? You know, I mean, aside from a family member passing or something, you know, like, yeah, I just don't. I'm not a morning person anymore. I'm a night owl. I usually, most nights I'm up 2-3 o'clock in the morning, writing, working on stuff, hanging out with Rach. We're night owls. My job, you know, you get done with these shows, you can't just go back to the hotel and go to bed. That doesn't work. You're too wired up. There's too much. You've been on stage for 45 minutes and you're doing a meet and greet and all that kind of stuff, and you're exhausted, but you're wired to the gills, right, mentally. So you have to go. I mean, there was a time when it was drugs, but these days it's just the excitement from the show, working on stuff. So I go back to the hotel, and I'm up 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning after them shows. It's just my natural state of things. I take a little extra vitamin D, try to get some sunshine where I can, but this is a Dracula job. Yeah, so I'd done that radio this morning, and the guy kept calling the podcast The Reckoning Yard, and he couldn't say it good, and he kept saying, oh, what's The Reckoning Yard about? Like, how the hell do I tell you what The Reckoning Yard's about? How in the hell could I possibly tell you what The Reckoning Yard's about? I invite any of you, y'all are better than me. Y'all probably figure out a good way to describe it. But I don't know how to describe it, you know. It's not, and that's the kind of questions you get on a radio call, you know. Tell us a little bit about truck astrology. What is there to tell you? It's a short content series where I make fun of pickup trucks. That's it. I mean, it's nothing. Yeah. Morning radio, buddy. But I am headed out to the fine state of Mississippi today. And I have been working on this piece about the late, great Jerry Clower. Jerry Clower! Where I'm going in Mississippi is it's about 8 miles from where the late, great Jerry Clower is buried, where his final resting place is. And I told y'all I'm gonna make that pilgrimage out there. I don't know if I'm gonna do it this evening when I first get in town. It looks like I'm probably gonna leave here about 2 o'clock in the PM. I reckon that put me in Macomb, Mississippi about 7 o'clock in the PM. We were supposed to do a car show, but they had to cancel it because there was another big car show happening like right down the street or something. So they've had to cancel that car show tomorrow. But ticket sales aren't great. So I'm gonna go out and do a little barking Saturday, try to drum up some attention for the show. Go try to visit some spots in Macomb and, you know, find some good stuff to eat, that kind of thing. Maybe that's when I'll run out there to old Jerry's place. Try to get some FaceTime with the ghost of a great, you know. I kept thinking about that. Well, y'all hear my piece. Some of the more astute of you that know old country music will be able to tell that it's heavily inspired by a song I heard when I was young that I've always liked called The Ride. And I think the first time I heard the song, it was David Allan Coe singing it. And gist of the song is he stops and picks up a hitchhiker in Alabama, and the hitchhiker turns out to be the ghost of Hank Williams Sr. Gives him some music advice and that sort of thing. My God, it's been a while since I recorded out here on a weekend morning, and my neighbors are throwing their usual rave. I forgot they did this. I used to get out here and try to record in the mornings while that was going on before I had these mics that don't pick it up. It might be picking it up. I don't know. It's pretty loud, shaking the window in the garage. Also, if you get out and about, if you're out there on the internet, you're looking for something. I just did, so my good buddy William Lee Martin, I'm doing the Christmas shows with every year. We go on a tour and do Christmas shows. We're getting geared up for that now. Our first one's November 29th out in Fredericksburg, Texas. And then we got a show in Gladewater. We got a show in Shreveport. We got another show in El Reno, Oklahoma, before we wrap the whole tour up in Grapevine, Texas. And so we're getting ready to put that show together. I've been writing Christmas sketches and comedy sketches for it. William Lee Martin put together this new brand and everything he's been building called Red Dirt Comedy. And, you know, guys like Jerry Clower fit right into Red Dirt Comedy. And he's trying to build something over there, and he started a new podcast, and it's like an interview talk show style format. And the very first episode is my episode. He had me come up there to Rome, Texas, and sit in with the studio with him, and did about a 45-minute interview with him about not just the nature of the business, but the nature of coming back and fighting for something you believe in, finding your way in the world, that sort of thing. And you guys should go check that out. You should go check the interview. I'll put a link in the chat. And I'll also pin a link in the comments. I'll pin the number one comment. It'll be a link that you can go watch that interview I did with William Lee Martin. I'm pretty proud of it. It's one of the better interviews I've ever done. Me and William Lee have known each other for a couple decades now. So it come out, it was a pretty good daggum interview. So that's going to be on the Red Dirt Comedy YouTube channel. But I'll get you guys that link. I'll have it, like I said, in the chat and on the comments. All right. Let's, I guess, get off into the meat of this thing. Is that a good segue? A little sharpening on the knife. We also got, we got some packages to open today. It's the last of the packages before we do our day of giving for the drivendreams.org. They did theirs in October. I wasn't able to participate because I was out there in Louisville. And I still have packages coming in, so I got about five packages here to open, four packages to open. And then that'll be, we'll get our final tally. Right now we're at 1,626 smiles for babies. And we'll get our final tally here of what we're going to be giving out here in the coming week. And I'll keep you guys posted on that. We'll probably film, make a little video about it, that kind of thing. I was talking to a good buddy of mine. Funny enough, named Billy Dooley. I've told y'all some stories about Billy. Billy was a record driver with me when I was at VIP Towing, and we worked together at Calvo Towing in Houston. And I lost touch with Billy over the years when I moved off to Colorado and done all that. Me and Tori split up and all that kind of stuff, and I ended up all over the place. And funny enough, we was in the same city most of the time, but Billy found me through the internet, sent me an email. He said, "Man, I just want to know if it's really you." He said, "We still tell stories about all the crazy shit you've done." And so I immediately emailed him back, said, "Here's my phone number, Bubba. Call me. I'd love to catch up with you." Billy's, you know, lived his life. Funny enough, me and Billy's lives kind of intersect. I fell off a roof in July of 2015, nearly died. Billy nearly got killed in a car wreck 2015, pretty close to July, maybe a little earlier in the year, May or something like that. Been down some similar paths. We've both been married, but he's been married about 19 years, and I've been married 17 years, and we've kind of, our lives have followed a similar trajectory, even as we've been apart. And you know, we talked about, I don't really miss them days. I don't, you know, but it would be a lie to say I didn't have some good times in those days. And granted, I had some substance abuse problems, some other stuff I was going on then, and was not in a very good relationship, but Billy reminded me of the fun we had. It struck me. I forgot sometimes, we tell them stories, you forget about all the fun you had. And Billy regaled me a story I'd forgot, where I broke a Nissan UD flatbed, cracked the frame right in half on that truck, trying to winch another truck out of a ditch. And then I used the winch to suck the frame back together and drove that truck back to the shop with a broken frame. I always consider myself a tape recorder, like an observer. I'm an observer. That's what I do. I live in these moments. I observe them, and I store them up here in the old rusty Rolodex and recall them when I need them. I've been a storyteller all my life. I've been an observer all my life. But when you're an observer, sometimes you forget that people are observing you too. And it was kind of wild to think, because, you know, I tell these stories about my past, and I tell these stories about different roads I've done been down, and it didn't dawn on me that there's people out there telling stories about me, you know. And it made me laugh to hear him and a couple of them old drivers that he's still friends with still out there telling crazy ass stories about old JW. It kind of put me, it made me think of another time. It just put me back in mode of that. You know, you don't know when the good times are, because they're happening all the time. And there's very few times in your life that you're not going to look back and be able to find something that you miss about that time frame. Now, we all go through some real hard shit occasionally that, you know, it's probably hard to look back at those times or look at a time you're going through now and find it. But I guarantee you there's something there. There's just almost always something there. I was specifically got to thinking about that little house me and Rachel had on Althea in Oak Forest when we first got together. Before we were married. This is probably the year before we were married. It has to be, because right after we got married, you know, it was a hurricane, we ended up moving out of that house. But when we were just together, we didn't have no kids outside of our jobs and the comedy club, which was most of our job. We didn't have a lot of responsibilities. Rachel was the general manager of the comedy club. She was making pretty good money. A lot better than me. I was a lowly comic working for scraps, but I also did all the maintenance at the comedy club. So I was working on the bathrooms and the urinals, and it was an old place built 30 years prior. So there was always plenty to work on between HVAC and the bathrooms and various things just falling apart because of age and time. I said age and time like that's two different things. And it put me in mind of the world's greatest cover band that never made it out of Houston. Back in them early days of living together, when the Nintendo Wii came out, Rachel wanted one. She grew up with Nintendo, was a Nintendo girl. And she wanted one of them Nintendo Wiis for the house. She was excited because we could play bowling on it and all these games. And we're kind of in that part of our life where we weren't really going to the bar that much. And both of our jobs involved a nightclub. And when you do that all the time, it's not what you want to do when you're not working. It just isn't. You don't want to spend all your time at a bar. You don't want to spend... We just want to be together, hang out together. My brother Joey and my best friend Steve at the time, Steve, we were all friends in high school. Steve, they were roommates. They had them a little place over there in Spring, Texas, right off Cypresswood Drive. And most of the time wasn't working, we was hanging out together. And, sorry about that. Got to turn the sound down on my phone. Once again, somebody called me before noon. What in the hell could you have possibly talked to me about? Pretty sure that's a bill collector. Anyways. Rachel bought that Nintendo Wii, and our house kind of became, it was the spot, man. It was a little old house, but it had a big old living room. We felt like it was a big TV. It was a 36-inch TV, but it felt like a big TV to us, you know, in that living room. I told y'all we had a long couch down one side and a short couch, that little love seat on the other side. And then we had another little old place you could sit. It was a little, I don't remember if it was like a wide chair or what it was, kind of off in the middle. Oh, no, that one couch was kind of an L. I couldn't remember. One couch was kind of an L. And so there's a place for everybody to hang out. Joey and Steve would come over. They'd bring a bottle of rum. I wasn't really drinking that much in them days. I had kind of skewed off to drinking, but I was heavily, that's when I really first started like really smoking marijuana on the regular. I was really, and because it was new to me, I was going a little hardcore with it. You know what I mean? We were getting stoned like we had never gotten stoned in our life. And we'd have gang over and we'd play that wee bowling till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and wee tennis. And it starts out, you know, everybody's up in the middle of the floor doing the moves and getting after it. And by the end of the night, we're just laying on the couches, moving the controller, you know, trying to do our bowling. But I started trying to think about the fun times in that house when we were there and there was all the craziness that went on there. It was such a chaotic time because, you know, I wasn't ready to settle down yet. I thought I was still wild and a little crazy. That's the place we were living where I was working on motorcycles all the time. And I always had some idea about something else I was about to get into. And wasn't nothing to throw everything in the car and both of us pile in the car and go out on a little comedy road trip. Only thing we had to take care of was we had this little Jack Russell named Tina. And Tina, we throw her in the carrier, take her just about anywhere with us. Some early days of the relationship, you know. Early days of kind of figuring out who we were together. So when I first became friends with David, when I was working in the transmission shop during the day, when I wasn't doing stuff up at the club, I'd work in the transmission shop during the day as a manager and help David run the transmission shop. And he'd come over and hang out from time to time. But him and Melina was already together, so they kind of had their own vibe going on over at their house. And we'd go over to their place. They'd come over to our place, that kind of thing. But Steve and Joey, they were just roommates. Still both pretty single. Steve was going through a divorce. He had just gotten divorced from his wife. He'd been with for like 12 years. And he was a bit of a mess, as you'll be once you go through something like that. That's when I bought that Bronco. I had a 68 Ford Bronco. Me and David went out to College Station one night and drug back. And I was out there trying to do work on that thing. Didn't know what I was doing half the time. That's where I really learned how to get good at drum brakes. I called David over to help me with the drum brakes on that Bronco. This is what that 750 did to me. He goes, well, let's take it. We took all the drum brakes apart on that front wheel, and he just throwed it all in a pile. And he goes, all right, now rebuild them. And I just looked at him like, how in the hell do I know where all that goes? And he said, well, you know, you can go look at the other side, right? Yeah, I guess. Instead of helping me do them, he stood there and talked to me while I figured out them springs and put them drum brakes back together. But by God, by the time I got to the other side, I had a little better handle on what I was doing. By the time I got to the back wheels, I felt like I might be a drum brake pro by that moment. Old David taught me just by throwing me to the wolves, which sometimes is the best way to learn anything, you know, is just to do it. I was out there working on that Bronco one day. This is funny as shit. So across the street from that house, we had this neighbor. I don't remember her name. We called her Mud Fence, and she was a single older woman in probably her 60s. But she was friends with our landlord, and she would spy on us and tell our landlord all kind of shit, how we were partying, everything we were doing. I was revving my motorcycle up. She had nothing better to do than sit there and watch us and then call my landlord every time we done something she thought we shouldn't be doing. You know, so then we get a call from the landlord, and that woman was crazier and shit, and have to deal with old Roxanne, the redheaded clown lady. We called her Mud Fence. I'm sure I've told you this before. Rachel's father was a good looking man. He was a handsome man. He kept himself well. He was fit. He's a good looking fella. Confident, dressed well, had a nice pickup truck. Just hitting that stage of his life. I think he was pretty close to 60 at that point. And them, old Mud Fence was in love with Ken. Mud Fence, boy, she thought Ken was the bee's knees. And she see him outside, boy, she start making her way across the street trying to chit-chat with him. And about the first three or four times she kind of hit on him, made a pass at him. I said, well, I don't know, you know, might be good to have something local right here in the neighborhood. He said, that woman looked like a mud fence. I never heard anybody describe it. He said, she's uglier than a mud fence. I said, boy, my God. And that became her name after that. That was old Mud Fence. Mud Fence had a son who was in his 30s and very gay. I mean, I don't know what levels of gay there are, but this fellow was flamboyantly so. And he liked to put on a leotard thing and do jazzercise in her front living room with the windows open. So everybody could see him in there doing his jazzercise and his leotard every day. And I don't remember his name either, but he also had a crush on my father-in-law. And they both just mooned over him every time they seen him, and it tickled the piss out of me because he couldn't stand neither one of them. We didn't like them because they was always ratting us out, trying to cause problems for us. I don't know how many times their son called the law on me. Just, I parked my car in the street one day, called the law on me, said I was blocking his driveway in from across the street. Wasn't anywhere near the driveway. It's just nonstop parade of them. Constantly calling the landlord, calling the police. And we were pretty tame as far as party standards. Worst thing we ever did was smoke too much pot over there. Well, I don't know how much you know about the marijuanas, but it doesn't make for a lively party. Not a lot of loud music and running around and hollering and breaking shit. None of that goes on. At some point, it ends up where you just... Hell, I went over to Harbor Freight and found it was an alligator clip on a telescoping tube. And it telescoped out to like 7 feet. Hell, at the end of the night, we'd clip a little joint in there. And me and Rachel lay on either one of them couches across the living room from each other and hand that joint back and forth with that telescoping. Wild partiers, let me tell you. Wild partiers. I was over there working on that Bronco one day. And I was trying to pull the bumper out. The bumper in the front was dented. But you know, this is good old steel Ford bumper from way back in the day. They had a little more oomph to them. Well, in the back of that garage, at one point that house had flooded and they had cut 2 foot of the drywall out. There was a little laundry room back there that was framed out and they had cut 2 foot. Oh, I got to tell y'all about that dryer. They cut 2 foot of the drywall out so it was exposed, the studs was. And I got the bright idea that I'd go back there and I'd wrap a strap, ratchet strap, around one of them studs real good. And then I ratchet strapped it to a chain that was hooked around in front of that bumper. And Rachel was off at work. I was there during the day by myself. And I was gonna back that Bronco up and pull that bumper out off that stud in that house. Some of you can tell right now this ain't a great idea. The studs ain't that strong. It was before I'd done a lot of construction. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I strapped it all up. Well, I got to worrying that daggum strap was going to come back, was going to break, and that chain was going to flop up and hit the windshield, go through the windshield, and final destination my ass. That's the kind of shit I worry about, the irrational stuff like that all the time. So I had this old piece of 3/4-inch plywood and I leaned it on the front of the hood of that Bronco, right? Up on the bumper, just cocked back at a little bit of an angle. so that I could back up and pull that bumper out. But if that chain broke, it'd just go up and slap that plywood. Nobody'd get hurt, and everybody lived to do something stupid another day. Boy, I was out there, and I was got that thing in reverse and just feathering that clutch out. Had a little 289 in it. Trying to pull that thing out. Boy, that bumper's not giving. I give it a little more. Boy, that bumper's not giving. I give it a little more. I feel that strap just a stretching. I stopped feathering the clutch, and I just let the clutch out to see if that thing would just snatch that bumper out. And when I did, that stud broke loose from the wall, shot straight through that garage, hit that ramp of plywood, and just exited the chat. Just left the chat, just straight up off that plywood, broke the strap. And I seen that 2x4 fly up in there and hit mud all the way across the street and hit Mud Fence's roof, boom, and shoot up off her roof and off in her backyard, where I assume it landed in the mud like a javelin. I said, oh, shit. I looked over there. Her windows was closed. She went outside. Boy, I unhooked that strap, that chain, throwed it in the garage, threw it plywood and drugs. Run my ass back in the house and sat there in the living room peeking through the window. Sure enough, boy, her door opened. She comes out there looking around, and here comes old Jazzercise around from the side gate. He's got this 2x4 dragging it with drywall still hanging on it. I sat in that house for 35 minutes and watched Mud Fence and Jazzercise try to figure out where this 2x4 from the sky came from. Never, ooh. Well, we'd have got an earful from the landlord about that one. Launching missiles. Man, one thing I done to that lady, she kept calling our landlord. She was pissing us off bad. We had a birthday party for me over there. Pretty chill affair, but we had like 20 people. But it was like a low key, nobody was really drinking. It was my 30th birthday. It was kind of a, it was older friends, you know, sitting around hanging out. My mom and dad come. It wasn't like a party, like, whoa, let's tear shit up. We weren't doing a lot of that, you know? Well, she called the law on that. I had to deal with the damn police on my birthday. That was kind of the final straw for me. It pissed me off. And they were cool. They understood that they were getting called out there for nuisance bullshit. But after that, I just started signing her up for every free thing I could. Everything I could find on the internet where they would mail some shit to your house if you signed up, I signed her address up. I said 2121 Althea. I still remember the address today. I would sign her address up for everything I could. I signed her up for the free hair club for men, every hair restoration thing around. I signed her up for the weeklies from every grocery store I could find, anything I could find on the internet where they was going to mail shit. Every time the mailman come to her house, that mailbox just looked like it was pregnant. Stuff packed with shit, and she'd be out there pulling all that crap out of her mailbox. I signed that woman up for everything I could, boy. That was my little slick way of getting back at her. Around this time, a video game comes out for that Wii system called Rock Band. Some of you may remember it. Rock Band come out, had the instruments, had a drum set and a guitar and a bass, like another guitar that you use for a bass guitar and a microphone. You could have yourself a whole little band. And it was a video game. The things come up on the screen, told you what to strum and play. Now, I ain't got a musical bone in my body. As much as I love music, as much as music completes me and makes every part of my day, I don't have no rhythm or timing. I can't sing on beat. I just don't have that thing, whatever it is. I've tried to teach myself how to play guitar. I got a dusty guitar in there that every time I try to teach myself how to tune it, I get frustrated and give up on it. I keep hoping one of these days I'm gonna have the patience to learn something like that. But I could play that game. I could play that video game. I could play that guitar real good on that video game. Well, you do it when you play that game. You can start a band. You give, you know, you make your own. Every one of you makes your own character in it. It started out as just me and Rachel. Rachel's got a lot of musical talent. You know, she's played a little piano, and Rachel was real good at the drums right off the bat. She has an innate sense of timing, and Rachel could drum her ass off right off the bat. She started doing all the tutorials, and she's just beating the hell out of them drumsticks. And the drums is the one thing you kind of got to know a little bit about how to do it in real life in order to play that game and enjoy it. So we never really had it. I never played drums. I couldn't keep time to save my life. I could get about 10 beats into the song and I was done. But Rachel played the shit out of them drums. And I'd sit over there in my little kickback office chair and play that damn guitar. We started having fun. Well, Joey and Steve come over one night and said, "Man, you got to join the band." Steve liked to sing. Steve wanted to be our vocalist. Steve knew all that music. They had a wide catalog of music. And the way the game works is you play your way up. You play in this one little small place, and then you get a gig over here. And it's just kind of like how entertainment works is you work and chip at it to build your following and all that kind of stuff. And then at some point, you're doing world tours with your band if you get good enough. It's a video game. There's always a way to get good enough. We named our band Giant Tube Sock. I don't remember how that name come apart other than I think it was just named after a big-ass tube sock. But we named the band Giant Tube Sock. Steve was our vocalist. Joey was our bass player. I was guitar player. Rachel was beating them drums. It got to be like throughout the week, we'd all be working and stuff. We'd be texting each other. "Let's get together Friday night. Let's get together." If I didn't have a gig Friday or Saturday night or even Sunday night, we got to rehearse. Giant Tube Sock's got shows to play. And they'd come over there and we'd smoke up and drink up and have our good time. And the band would get after it, boy. We'd start playing them shows. There we started achieving a little fame there in the game. We started doing pretty good. The old band was on its way. We're getting all the articles written about us, getting fancier instruments, going to far away. We were playing Los Angeles and Seattle. We was getting out there. And it became a weekly thing where we got together and we played as Giant Tube Sock on this video game. And like all good things, at some point, something's got to come to an end. We're still living our lives in that house. I spent about half my days out there in the garage working on stuff. I decided I was going to get into bicycle riding again. I went over to the pawn shop and I bought me this, I got all excited. I thought I got me a good deal on a Diamondback mountain bike. I started fixing that mountain bike up and I used to joke with people because that's the old saying, right, is it's like riding a bike. You can't forget. It's like riding a bike. Everybody says, it's like riding a bike. You never forget how to do it. Man, while I was trying to relearn how to ride a bike, if you say that to me, I'm going to punch you right in the nuts. Because trying to ride a bike, you will forget how to ride a bike if you ain't careful. You need to get on one every once in a while to remind yourself how to do that. I started getting brave. I was riding that bike around the neighborhood, jumping off curves and stuff. I was getting brave. In fact, right before I went to Iraq, go do comedy shows in Iraq, I jumped that bike off the curve one day and the damn neck tube on that bicycle broke. It just come loose in the air. So like in the air, I was holding the handlebars and the neck tube and the rest of the bike I was sitting on. When I landed, that old frame popped up and hit me in the ribs and cracked two of my ribs. Now, when I went to Iraq, I remember those first three or four, I was still healing from them broke ribs when we got to Iraq. And I was climbing in and out of army tanks and shit. Well, me and Chris was throwing each other around on that Navy boat. That damn, I had them broke ribs still. Giant Tube Sock kept playing, kept growing. there were problems. Steve was getting worse. Getting less fun, man, when your lead singer shows up drunk. Steve got into the pills, man, and the pills were not doing Steve no favors. He got into them pills, man, and he'd get a couple drinks in him. He was like a toddler. And it seemed like about half the night's giant tube sock got together. We were irritated with Steve, or he was passed out on the couch, and it was just me and Joey and Rachel keeping the band alive with no vocalists. Steve came over there all pilled out and drunk one night. And I had found out, purely by accident, that squirrels had gotten up into our dryer and eaten some of the wires in the dryer. Well, in doing so, they had grounded the dryer out a little bit. So if you go in there and that dryer was on, you touch the frame of that dryer, it shocked the piss out of you. Good old Volt. Knock you right on your ass. And I didn't know how to fix it yet. I was still trying to figure it out. But one of those nights, Steve was over there drunk. I don't know how many times I talked him into touching that dryer, but I know I electroshocked that dude about 7 times that night. Every time I could, he'd be like, I said, hey, man, you go check that dryer. I think we got some towels in that dryer. I need to clean up a mess over here. Huh? He'd go there. Ah! That house was a piece of shit. It was falling apart. There was roof leaks and ceiling leaks and dang-gum mosquitoes. Roof leaks and ceiling leaks everywhere. And there's parts of the ceiling that were falling down and I'd have to patch it. We couldn't get the landlord to fix nothing. The front door was trying to fall off. I'd have to fix that. The back door was trying to fall off, working on that. The back deck was falling through. We were having to replace boards as we could. But it's a rent house. You don't spend a bunch of money on a rent house. We did decide, so it had hardwood floor all through the house except the kitchen. And the hallways had been carpeted with this really ugly carpet. And it was all tore up and she wasn't gonna replace it. So we ripped all the carpet out and all the tack strips and all that. And it started out, Steve was gonna help me redo this floor in this hallway. Well, that's where Steve was in his life, not showing up. And so he ended up me and Rachel redoing this floor in this hallway. And I sanded that. After we pulled all the tacks, all that stuff, I sanded that entire wood floor with a little bit of orbital sander I bought at a garage sale. Sanded that whole floor just down there on my hands and knees. I seen a picture the other day. Rachel's going through some pictures of me laying on that floor with Tina on my back, my sander, sanding that floor. I put some mini wax polyurethane on that floor I did something wrong when I put that mini wax polyurethane on there. And to this day, I can't tell you what I done wrong with it, but that shit didn't never dry. That floor was sticky when we moved out of that house. You walk up and down that hallway in socks. We keep trying to keep the band together because we were having fun. But Steve's fading fast on us. One night, Steve was supposed to come over there and we was all going to get together. We was going to play. And hell, we don't hear from Steve that night. He never shows up. Joey passes out on the couch. Me and Rachel retire off to the bedroom. And get a phone call about 2 or 3 in the morning. And Steve, he's like, hey, I'm on the way to your house. I'm running a little late. A little late, bro. Like 8 hours late. I'm running a little late. I hear him pull up in the driveway. I go out there. The front half of his truck is missing. The whole front end of his truck is smashed in with yellow paint all over it, and Steve's so drunk and high he can't get out from behind the wheel. I was so frustrated. For one, I was scared. He could have got himself killed, could have got somebody else killed. What we sort of suspect happened is he got off. He went to a music show without telling nobody in downtown Houston and got into his pills and drinking and then left. And they had just kind of, on Main Street down in downtown Houston, there's a train. And they put these big yellow, what we figured out is he hit one of these big yellow concrete poles down there by the train. He was right down in that area. There was yellow paint all over. He had this beautiful 2004, 2005 GMT 800, red Silverado, extended cab, Z71. Gorgeous pickup. He had just totaled the front end of it. I didn't know what to do with him. I just took his keys out of the truck and left him sleeping behind the driver's seat. Next day, we tried to talk to him about it. And, oh, I don't know what happened, and it was somebody else's fault. And same kind of thing. It always happens when somebody's going down the tubes. And at the same time, him and Joey are having problems as roommates because Steve's getting behind on his rent. He's not taking care of his responsibilities because he's drugging and drinking all the time. Now there's all this extra tension in the friendship, right? Joey sometimes doesn't want to come over to our house because he's worried Steve's going to show up. He don't want to be around Steve. Sometimes Joey wants to go do something else, just get away from the whole situation. And Giant Tube Sock comes to an end in the way a lot of great bands have come to an end over the years. Steve goes off the rails. Our lead singer goes off the rails with substance abuse. Joey trades his bass guitar in for a keyboard and do software work and pirate rock so he can go live the Jimmy Buffett life on sailboats. And me and the drummer got hitched and back out of the party scene. The greatest band that never was, Giant Tube Sock. One day I'm going to make a fake documentary about it. The rise and fall of Giant Tube Sock. Went through a lot of bad times in the house. A lot of bad times. It was for comedy club closed. And well, we got screwed on that deal. And family disagreements, stuff like that. There was a lot of rough times in the house. Stuff with Steve, watching Steve go down the drain, not being able to stop it. Joey, somewhere in that time period, meets a little Sarah, starts, well, we already knew Sarah, but he starts kind of dating Sarah somewhere in that time period. Now, I guess it's a little later than that. He dated this guy every once in a while named Brandy, and she was the worst person in the world. He would bring her over to the house every once in a while. She's like, y'all are grown-ups that play video games? That's what's wrong with y'all? And she's one of them. And I was like, just get the hell on. I ain't asking you to be a part of it. Just get the hell on. We're having a good time enjoying ourselves. Well, I guess we could be out the bar running up bar tabs, spending a bunch of money. Or we could be here having a good time at our house doing something we enjoy. There's always, you got to watch small people. Small people are always out to belittle anything you're doing. Small people, they love to belittle. Small people love to tear down. And the world's full of small people. You got to watch out for them. They'll drain your energy. They'll get in your head. Every once in a while over the years, me and Rachel, it's still all set up in our living room. Our kids aren't really as big into it, but we used to play every once in a while. And for years, me and Rachel kept playing that game. They put out a Beatles version, and, boy, we went out and bought that Beatles version right away, and They also made a custom George Harrison style guitar for it for the Beatles version. Boy, we got that George Harrison guitar and got Rachel some new drumsticks. Boy, we start playing again. Got Joey over one night to play bass for us. But we didn't have no lead singer. Giant Tube Sock never had that reunion. Not too much longer after that, we get married. And right after our wedding, Hurricane Ike drops two big old trees right through that. One through the kitchen and one through the garage. I mean, limbs coming through the ceiling. And we found out the landlord had canceled the insurance on the house. And the house wouldn't get fixed anytime soon. We moved out of that house and moved off to Spring. And, you know, that's where I started my own business. And life got a lot more serious after that. You know, it was back to the hustle of survival. And you know, and it feels like minutes later we had kids. But for a little brief period of time in that house, we was just as free as two people could be, having a good time with our friends. And a lot of bad happened in that house, but boy, you know, when I really sit back and dig, boy, we sure had a lot of laughs and a lot of good times. We had a little swimming pool out back, one of those little inflatable models. We'd get out there and carry on into the night. That's the way it goes, you know. Days of getting stoned on the couch and playing video games all Saturday are coming to a close. Days of Steve are coming to a close because he's decided to march full speed towards whatever ending he's looking for. Joey's getting distant. Joey's looking for his own, right, his own somebody. Joey's ready to have a life with somebody like I'm having. Let's wrap that up right there. Let's do some testimonials, and then we'll unwrap some of these boxes here real quick. Let's see what we got here. Testimonials, if you will, from last week. Here we go. At Matthew Black, in reference to your question about bear meat here in Southwest Virginia, we absolutely eat bear. It's not as popular as it used to be, but still very relevant. Given the choice, I'll take properly prepared bear over beef any day, especially for roast or shredded barbecue sandwiches. Rendered bear fat has a million uses as well. You can't go buy bear meat anywhere, though, because it's wild game. Boy, I got to get me a show in Southwest Virginia if that's where I got to go to get me some bear meat. Sorry, I got a little scratch here. I'm happy here. I knew somebody ate bear somewhere. I just knew they had to. I played enough Red Dead Redemption to know people won't bear meat, by God. I got to get me some bear. I think some smoked bear ribs might be where it's at. Oh, at Christian Mental Ward, my old buddy Christian Mental Ward. Thanks for the shout out, JW. Hope you're feeling better. I was supposed to go to 24 Hours of Lemons race Sunday. And I told you I was going to go out there, and I didn't end up making out. I was so sick when I got back from San Antonio, I didn't have no voice, and I just felt like a hammered pile of dog shit, and I couldn't talk myself into driving an hour down to Angleton. And then I also didn't want to take that shit around people. It was obviously something contagious I picked up. It was already going through my family, so I didn't want that to be the gift keeps on giving for my racing buddies. Go down there and hug a couple people, shake hands. The next thing you know, everybody in the Lemons races needing lemon because their voice is gone. At Brock Orr 96, be like the Houston highway system. Never stop working on yourself, no matter how inconvenient it is for everyone else. I say that every once in a while. One of my fans will write something that's so funny, I'm mad I didn't think of it first. And that is one of those things. That tickled. When I read that, I nearly pissed myself. That tickled me to death. That's one of the funniest things anybody's ever said to me. Thank you so much, brother. Glad you guys are watching and listening. I know them shows I have to do in a hotel room aren't always the most popular shows because I have to kind of do things on the fly. And I appreciate those of you that tolerate and stick through it. I always enjoy hanging out with my good friend Barry. And I hope you guys enjoy when he pops on from time to time. And we are going to do some more guests this season. I'm working on some stuff. I'd really like to get Dr. H. Dr. H is the surgeon who's this badass pet surgeon that volunteered his services to help our little Ophelia out, who's just doing gangbusters. That cat runs the house right now. She has ascended to her throne. She's doing healthy. She's got he's doing weekly films on her to keep track of her because this leg, the one that was really shattered, has fused up, but the growth plate's damaged, and he's worried it's going to turn her foot in, so he may have to do a little surgery where they give the bone, cut a relief into the bone, surgical procedure to allow that foot to stay straight. But she's using them claws, and it ain't slowed her down none. But I took one of my old Shakespeare fishing rods and tied a string on it and put her little, she's got this little toy we call a cheeky fish. It looks like a fish and shiny flip feathers. And I fish with her all. It's the best catfishing I've ever done in my life. Boy, that cat will chase that thing all over. And she's got the energy of a kitten, so you can sit there for an hour and she'll chase that thing. And she's doing fantastic. I hadn't slowed her down. So he's keeping an eye on her in case he has to do that. But he's a wildly interesting guy. And I want to have him here on the, he's a military veteran. He owns a bar and he's like one of the top pet surgeons in the United States, which that's just bad. I think, I tell you guys all the time, I think every one of us got a story worth listening to. I think every one of you do. I love when y'all tell me stories in the comments about stuff going on with your life. And y'all send me letters and emails with stories about how our stories intersect and relate. So I'm going to try to get Dr. H on here, and I think I'm going to have an author on here. I just read her book, and she's going to send me an ARC of her new book because she wants me to read that one too, and she's fantastic. Y'all hear me talk about James Lee Burke all the time. This woman, she has that gift of depiction, and she wrote a book about the narco corridors of Texas and a little immigrant girl that escapes some coyotes and an old Texas woman what saves her. And it was a fantastic book. I enjoyed every. I judge a book. If I pick a book up and start reading it, and I might have to put it down for a little bit. But if I pick it back up and then I got to finish it before I put it down again, that's a good book. And books only come in two flavors for me. I pick it up, I start reading it, I lose interest in it, I don't ever finish it. Or I do that. I lock in on it and I got to finish the damn thing. And her book was very much like that. Let's get this up. Let's see what we got here. Got a letter. Dear JW, after enjoying your short form content, I was delighted to find out you had a podcast. After listening to a few of the latest episodes, I took your advice and went back to the beginning. While listening to an episode in season two, you're talking about seeing a small Mazda Repu rip around the track, and you made a comment about how you like to have one because it looked fun as shit. Well, I decided that you indeed needed one in your life. Although the one included might look like a toy, I can assure you it is not much smaller than the original. I was also thankful to find out that you postponed the delivery of the Hot Wheels for all those smiling babies, and I also sent a few of those as well. Keep the laughs coming, and I hope to see you in the Pacific Northwest soon. Sincerely, Jason Bennett, Repu 86. Repu Guy 86. P.S. The next time you're in Western Washington, if you so desire, I'll let you drive the real thing, as they are, in fact, fun as shit. Hell yeah, that was at the Lemons race. And, look at that. Sent me a little Mazda Repu pickup. Look at that. I'm going to hold on to that. That one's going to stay with me, because that's a Repu. I know you sent some others for them babies, but that's got to go on display here in the wrecking yard. Thank you for that, Jason. Thank you for the wonderful letter. I really appreciate it. I love when fans of my short content come over here and find something to relate to in the wrecking yard, because as I've told many of you, especially my day oneers, I think maybe this and the book is the most important work I ever do. I do. I don't know where this thing ends either, you know? It's not as car-centric as it used to be, but it's not completely not car-centric. I'm always going to love cars, and once I get the Volkswagen here, start working on that, there's probably going to be a lot more car talk as a result of that. Finally got me a part for the Cadillac. Hadn't had a chance to put it on yet, but I'm going to be doing that soon. Let's see what we got here. This is Amazon Fulfillment Services. Hope there's a note inside. What we got? My goodness. Hey. Come on, tell me there's a note. Oh, our old buddy Wayne Havens. God bless it. Wayne's got one of the best hearts anybody ever met in the comedy business. Our old buddy Wayne Havens. Y'all heard me talk about him. Me and him done comedy together back in the old days. Sent us a advent calendar with 10 Hot Wheels cars in it. It's a Hot Wheels advent calendar. And some kid is going to really enjoy the hell out of that. I'm so excited that that's going in our donations here for them babies at thedrivendreams.org. And let's add that. That's 10 cars. 10 cars a list. Oh, I lost my pencil. Been doing carpentry. Where I finished that porch. I didn't finish that porch. I'm lying, y'all. I didn't finish that porch. I didn't finish that porch. I did get that porch. Me and Rachel got the porch all screened in with a new screen. I made most of the new trim, but on the bottom, I want to do a 1x6 to kind of lock the bottom in really good. And I got to go buy some 1x6s so I can make that last piece that goes around the bottom. And then I'll trim all the rest of the screen. But I made a joke about that to my buddy Adam, my editor. And Adam goes, you know how many people I know that have a screened in porch that all they're missing is just a little bit of trim they ain't finished? Like, you asshole. But he's right. It'll probably take me a month to get the rest of that trim done. I'm going to try to have it done by Christmas, but I was doing some carpentry work. This showed up at the P.O. box, a 50-pack of Hot Wheels cars, and I ain't got a clue who they're from because there ain't no note with them, but this is another 50 smiles, and this come from Albuquerque, Amazon Fulfillment Services in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So if you send us 50 cars from Albuquerque, New Mexico, maybe these might be the ones that Jason Bennett sent us. It's hard to say. I'll have to, hopefully he'll reach out and tell us if these are the ones he sent us, because he did say he sent some cars on through. That's another 50 smiles for babies. Where are we at right now? Let's see. 6, 5, 6, 7, 8. That puts us at 1,686 smiles for babies we're going to be handing out. And now we got this big old box. Big old box. I'm going to have to move my coffee. Let's get this box and see what's in it. It sounds like some Hot Wheels. It's heavier than shit, I tell you that. That's a good sized box right there. Oh, the newly sharpened Freedom Knife. Ooh, cut like butter. Cut like butter. Ooh, it's like butter. Well, that's blocking the camera. Let me move this so we can get this thing down and see what in the hell's all in this box. Oh, daddy. That's a heavy daggum box right there. What do we got? Well, it looks, there's a 50-pack of Hot Wheels right there. 50-pack of Hot Wheels car. 50 more smiles. Daggum, it ain't another 50-pack. Hell, it's just all 50-packs. Look at that. 4 50-packs of Hot Wheels. That's 200 more smiles for babies. That's 200 more smiles for children. Well, they ain't got a lot to smile about sometimes around Christmas. And it just tickles me to death that you good-hearted people have made this happen. that we really gonna put a dent. And this is from Mr. Jerry, my name's Sam. Been a big fan before that first Father's Day podcast and well into the now. From Maine, Florida, and even my trip. There's some more here. Even my trip to Thailand, this podcast has been a relaxing light in my young life. You're an inspiration. I love listening to your podcast while driving and fixing this damn Mazda B4000 I got, but love dearly. Another Mazda pickup guy. Another Mazda pickup guy. Thank you for all you do. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Samuel Baum. Man, Samuel, God bless you. Samuel just gave us 200 smiles to give to babies. 200 smiles to give to babies. Get them down here so y'all can see me again. Well, I couldn't be more tickled. We'll add that to the tally and see where we stand. I was, you know, in the beginning, I thought, boy, if we got 1,000 cars, we'd be doing something, you know? Hell, I thought we got 500 cars, we'd be doing something. But by God, that's another 200 cars. Let me do some figuring here. Shouldn't be hard math. Y'all probably already got it figured out in your head. That puts us at 1,800, nearly 2,000 cars that we're going to give away next week. 1,886 cars. God almighty, look at that. Tell me there ain't no goodness in the world. You're surrounded by it, brother. Surrounded by it. There's a lot of light left in this world. I know it feels dark sometimes, but there's a lot of light left in this world. A lot of light. I hope y'all are doing all right out there. There's been a lot of upheaval in the world lately. Some days it feels like everything's changing. Other days it feels like the same old bullshit we've always been trudging through. The good news is none of it lasts forever. One day, whether you believe it or not, you'll find yourself missing some part of the world as it is now. When we were living in that junky old house off Althea, you could not have convinced me that I'd ever miss that place. Dodgy wiring, ceiling leaks, roof that sighed every time it rained, nosy neighbors who somehow made being unpleasant their full-time job. But I'll never forget asking Rachel to marry me somewhere between the living room and the kitchen. I'll never forget the games we played in that living room with my friends back when times were good, before that little circle fell apart. I'll never forget working on motorbikes in that garage by myself with my little dog. The thing about good times is you don't always recognize them until you're on the other side of it. You need distance to see what mattered. That distance is the filter that often gives those memories value. I'd like to move my family to a better place someday. And as small as our little house is right now, and as hot and swampy as Houston stays, as many tornadoes and derechos and hurricanes as we dodge, I already know I'll miss this chapter. I'll miss the rebuilding, the growing, the surviving. One day I'll think about all of us sharing this one very old bathroom and me fighting every kind of bug and plant infestation known to man, and I'll laugh. And I'll miss it. And some of y'all are listening right now saying, hell no, I ain't gonna miss any of this. Some of you are going through something brutal, grief, loss, heartbreak, the kind of hurt that makes the future feel like it's made out of fog and bad guesses. But I promise you this. One day you'll long for something from this moment in time. Maybe it's simple. Maybe it's just a door that creaks just right every time. Maybe it's the sound of your little cat's feet padding down a wood hallway. Maybe it's a voice you'll never hear again. There will be something. There's always something. Learning that has made me really try to pay attention to the things I know I'll miss while I'm still living them, right here, right now. Told you I don't know where this thing ends, but I know one day I'll miss sitting out in this old garage talking to y'all every Sunday. Ain't coming soon, but everything has to end. I'm rooting for you. I hope that you're being a little bit of an observer in your own life, that you're recording and mentally recording the things that you'll miss one day. Pay attention to it. Pay attention to the way your room looks right now. Pay attention to the way your life looks right now. Pay attention to the people in your life right now. Even if they're not permanent, some people ain't permanent. Steve wasn't a permanent person in my life. Doesn't mean I don't miss the good times we had, the good memories. Doesn't mean I don't often think of him fondly. Pay attention to that stuff. I'm rooting for you. If you are going through something hard, I hope you're coming out on the back side of it. Whatever you are right now is enough. You're enough. You're good enough. You're enough. It's that simple. I know you are. That's why I root for you. I'm JW, and I love you. $1,886. That is wild. Something that started as a fart of an idea. 1,886 cars. That's a lot of joy. That's a lot of joy we're going to bring. Going to take two cars to haul it all up there, but it's going to be a lot of joy. Come back next week. I'll tell you guys how Mississippi went down. I hope it goes well. Nothing else. I think I'm going to enjoy getting out there and getting into a little different culture. I don't go to Mississippi often because of Louisiana. I would probably go to Mississippi and Alabama more if it wasn't for Louisiana. But I got in so much trouble in Louisiana back in the day, I still feel nervous driving. Even though I got a clean license now and I don't ride dirty, I still sort of always feel like I'm going to go to jail when I'm in Louisiana. I'm even nervous thinking about driving through Louisiana today. I'm going to drive through Louisiana today, and I'm a little nervous about it. Guess if I'm in the chat today, y'all know I made it to Louisiana. I'm back. Still got a little bit of that cough. Mm-hmm.